McPherson filling in for Evan Bray on this Monday morning. Hope your week is off to an awesome start wherever in this beautiful province or beyond we might find you on this Monday morning. Our business analyst Paul Martin is here to weigh in on a topic you've probably noticed if you've been paying attention to the news in recent days. Paul, we have seen some pretty big announcements over the past week or so of the Saskatchewan government committing itself to working closely with other provinces when it comes to an effort to improve trade. A couple of the notable agreements. Premier Scott Moe last Tuesday signed a deal with Ontario Premier Doug Ford as well as Alberta Premier Danielle Smith, trying to coordinate the transportation and export of oil and gas, as well as minerals, critical minerals they're often described as now, from Western Canada to refineries, seaports, and storage facilities, both in Canada and beyond. Then, at the same time, the government of Saskatchewan committed itself to working closely with the government of Manitoba to try and establish what they're calling a northern trade corridor that would run through the port of Churchill in northern Manitoba. Now, Paul, I know a lot of this comes as a direct result of the, call it the destabilization of our trade relationship with the United States, thanks in, well, entirely to President Donald Trump's policies. I was going to say in no small part, but it really is in large part. But Paul, do you think that some of this, these interprovincial trade deals, is some of this just posturing, or will we see actual economic benefits as a result of these trade agreements?
Well, it's a very good question, because the jury would be out on that, because if you look at them, these are really memorandums of understanding, letters of agreement, basically declaring intentions, but there is nothing binding about these things. But if you step back a little bit, just say, what's causing all of this? I mean, Saskatchewan signed, what, three or five deals or five of these letters in the last week? And we went 25 years without doing anything like this, and all of a sudden, one week, we get such a flurry. Well, Donald Trump triggered it all. I mean, it really has started this whole conversation in Canada about trade. We have, some would argue, been maybe a bit lazy on this, that having the American market next door, the big markets so culturally, you know, aligned with ours, so easy to do business in, that we got a little complacent about doing stuff elsewhere. And all of a sudden, if that cozy relationship with the Americans is threatened, we have to almost get into panic mode here to try and figure out what do we do next. But then also opens the door to eliminating some sacred cows. And as they like to say in you know, business circles, that sacred cows make the tastiest burgers. Some of these things are getting blown up, and now you're seeing Western Canada in particular has been much more aggressive on this for years than, say, Central Canada. Central Canada is pretty comfortable. They are the ones who have been relying on the U.S. They didn't really see Western Canada as anything more than a, you know, warehouse, just a place to get resources. Well, all of a sudden, the whole world has changed, and now Saskatchewan, Alberta, Manitoba, we have a voice. Ontario gets it, by the looks of it, that they're starting to, you know, partner up with us, and we're looking at that Energy East thing, if we can't get that pushed through, because Quebec is reticent to see a pipeline and BC is reticent to see another oil pipeline going out to the West Coast, all of a sudden that whole target area of the Hudson Bay route that's been around for, I don't know, as long as I've been covering anything, so it's probably been 40 or 50 years we've talked about Churchill as a potential port. Now these things have got so much impetus. It's, you know, is it lip service? I don't know at this point, but I just see this, that there seems to be a coalescing of political will around these topics. So maybe it's more than lip service, but there's nothing binding yet.
How much of this, Paul Martin, is going to ultimately require the federal government to sign off? I mean, Saskatchewan's been trying to get a pipeline built for, I can't remember how long. And, you know, every time I see something about, oh, this gets us closer to building a pipeline, there's just always that nagging doubt in the back of my head that, well, if the feds say no, we're still essentially back at square one. How much of these memorandums of understanding, these interprovincial trade agreements, are really just designed to put pressure on the federal government to get those approvals we've looked for so long?
Yeah, I think there is some merit in that argument. But, you know, so much of the jurisdiction around resource development in particular relates to is in the hands of the province. So if you've got provinces starting to agree, then you've got a whole lot more momentum. And the challenge has been lately is that, what does consultation with First Nations and traditional lands and these kinds of things look like? But we're also seeing Indigenous groups step up and say, hey, we want to be a part of this corridor for, say, the Churchill Run. And so, you're seeing there is a lot of politics to be sorted out here and a lot of vested interests. But, for the first time, we're seeing momentum on this topic. And the feds do have to participate. But let's face it, if everybody else is lining up, the feds will have to line up, too, or that's political dynamite for them to be opposed. And but the flip side is the biggest trade barrier, interprovincial trade barrier in Canada of all is supply management. And the feds are not moving on that one. And, it's a big irritant in Washington, too. And so the feds haven't been getting in the way of, say, Saskatchewan signing on with other provinces. But on the other hand, they're not really doing a lot to facilitate this either.
The most sacred of all the sacred cows, the supply management agreements. Business analyst Paul Martin is with us. Now, speaking of the kind of political side of this, Canada's still working to negotiate that new trade deal with the United States. And we know how kind of touchy or, well, I guess touchy is a pretty good way to put it when talking about the U.S. President Donald Trump. Do you suppose that he's going to see this push that at least the provinces are doing? And do you think that it might hurt our chances of getting the best possible deal with the U.S.?
Yeah, I'm sure that the State Department is watching the debate going on in Canada very closely. And if they see any kind of a difference of opinion between Ottawa and provincial capitals, they will exploit that. They will pass that through to the negotiators in the U.S. and make sure that they understand that Canada is not necessarily unified in its debate with Washington over trade. But, one of the things that Premier Moe has put out there is the notion of having the other provinces sign on to the New West Partnership, which is kind of the granddaddy of them all in terms of interprovincial trade relationships in Canada. It was formalized first with BC, Alberta, Saskatchewan, then subsequently Manitoba signed on. And now Premier Moe has said to everybody else, come on and join in. That's an interesting one because it does lay some groundwork. That one's binding, and it is not that well understood, I don't think, but it basically says no province can put a barrier up to an out-of-province, say, company bidding for public procurement. And so if the government of Saskatchewan puts out a tender, it can't buy local because it has to afford the same opportunities to Alberta and BC. And if an Alberta company came in cheaper, well, theoretically, they would do it. That caused a lot of grief around here. And the buy local people were saying, hang on, Alberta's eating our lunch and they're taking, public sector bids from, people who are taxpayers here. And that prompted a kind of a change which allowed the Saskatchewan government, or the Saskatchewan government said, well, listen, we will not necessarily take only the lowest price that is bid. We will take the best value. So it might be a higher price, but it's more value. And there are more bells and whistles offered by the supplier or something. That's been one that I think has disappointed the business community here because no bureaucrat really wants to stick their neck out and make a value judgment. They would just, they're so much safer to just say, well, the lowest price came in and that happened to go to a BC company, so that's where it's going. So, it's that one is one to watch as well because I don't think we're done with that one yet. That is, procurement is a public sector procurement is really a challenging one. And with Premier Moe now stepping up and saying, come on to the rest of the country, join in here. Keep an eye on that one because it may well spark some more discussion as we go down the road.
Most definitely. And we've seen the Moe government taking some flack from the provincial NDP opposition for some of the contracts that did go to out-of-province companies, or in some cases, American companies. And they've really tried to make it a thorn in this government's side. So it will be very interesting to see how that one plays out. Business analyst Paul Martin is with us. Paul, I also have to ask you about the federal government's role in working to eliminate some of these interprovincial trade barriers. I mean, we heard, well, Mark Carney ran for office on a promise of free trade within Canada by Canada Day. We're now towards the end of July, and it doesn't seem like there's really been a whole lot of progress. Are you getting the same sense?
I am. And this will tell you just how deeply entrenched all of this stuff is in Canada. And it took something, a bomb the size of Donald Trump to be able to blow this thing up and get it onto the table, if I can put it that way. I mean, these interests are very well entrenched, and it's I think the Carney is probably finding out now that he's actually got the reins of power that it's going to be way more difficult to dislodge some of those long held positions and to make Canada more competitive. But then you hear on the other side that if we did this, it would improve the Canadian economy by $200 billion. I mean, that's a massive gain that's gone on, and hopefully we will not lose the momentum that we've got here. And even the deals that Scott Moe's been signing in the last 10 days or something, that just adds more fuel to that fire and keeps that momentum rolling. So even if it's just lip service and it's nothing binding, it's a signal that, we're moving in a direction and the rest of the country needs to get on with it. And the feds need to figure out how are they going to be a part of making that happen.
Well said. Before I let you go, Paul, I'm just going to ask, from the view from 10,000 feet up, are both the provincial and federal governments on the right track here now that it's become obvious to everyone that our trade situation needs some serious improvement? Are they doing the right things, or are there a couple of points where maybe they should be focusing a little bit more or directing a little bit more resources?
Yeah, I think we're moving in the right direction. I think we'd probably go back to, if you have to find something I could be critical of, it's that just no movement on supply management. And that really is one that defies natural advantage. It makes more sense to, say, grow agricultural products like poultry or dairy or that sort of stuff, where you have abundant land and abundant feed. Well, that's like the prairies. But instead, we've got to concentrate it in Ontario and Quebec, really, because it's based around population as opposed to natural capacity to produce. If you look at what happened in the U.S., for example, where it's unfettered, where's the dairy industry? It's in Wisconsin. Where's the poultry industry? It's in Arkansas. They're in, more agricultural, remote states than they're not New York and California, basically. Where in Canada, we've got the opposite. We've made it regulatory as opposed to competitive. You could probably bring the food price down by dismantling that, but it's too politically entrenched. So there you are. I mean, we still got a ways to go on this thing, but we are finally having the conversation, and it's not just a lone voice in the wilderness somewhere. It's now actually political leaders that are saying, no, it's time that we revisit this thing.
Well, it is always good to have your analysis on these things, Paul. I really appreciate you taking the time.
Not at all. Take care.
Business analyst Paul Martin catching up with us on this Monday morning. Well, you heard him mention supply management a couple of times, and there was an excellent piece in the National Post this week about that topic. Andrew Richter, an associate professor of political science at the University of Windsor, is wondering whether keeping supply management around is economic suicide for Canada. More thoughts on that in just a minute. Keep it locked right here on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME. Taylor McPherson sitting in for Evan Bray to help you start your week on this Monday morning. We were just talking with our business analyst, Paul Martin, about trade and some of the interprovincial efforts that are happening, even as our federal government continues to try and negotiate a brand new trade deal with U.S. President Donald Trump, who, of course, made tariffing the heck out of everybody kind of the cornerstone of his reelection campaign. And of course, as soon as he became reelected, he moved to do exactly that. Now, Trump and the EU struck a deal while Trump was golfing at his course in Scotland, because of course he was. They actually struck what sounds like a pretty firm deal for 15% tariffs on most goods. The EU agreed to buy about $750 billion worth of U.S. energy and invest about $600 billion more into the American economy. And as a result, Trump and the EU now have a trade deal. Or I guess I just should say the United States and the EU now have a trade deal. But will Canada be able to follow suit? When we were talking with Paul Martin, he mentioned some of the sacred cows of the Canadian economy. The things we're just not willing to give up. And the big one, of course, remains supply management. Now, writing in the National Post this week was Andrew Richter, who's an associate professor of political science over at the University of Windsor. He says supply management is perhaps the greatest stumbling block to a new deal. And he says the question is, just how far will Canada be willing to go to protect our supply management program? Or, Richter writes, to put it another way, would the Canadian government be willing to scupper the talks and a potential deal because it remains fully committed to supply management? Now, he makes the very, very valid point, I think, that the question should be absurd. This should be a non-issue. It should be, okay, we can get rid of supply management if it means a good, solid trade deal with the USA. Because, as Richter writes, it mostly benefits our supply management program, that is, about 10,000 dairy farmers, most of whom are based in Quebec and Ontario. When the program first began, it benefited about 150,000 farmers. Now it's less than 10% of that. As for the question, he says, of how much more Canadians pay as a result of supply management, studies have shown the average Canadian family spends up to $600 more per year because of it. But despite all of that, supply management remains almost inexplicably popular among Canadians. Richter points to a 2023 poll that showed that more than 90% of respondents believed that supply management was important, or believed rather that it was important that their dairy products come from within Canada. As somebody who's been to a grocery store in the last couple of years, you might not feel the same way. For me, the question of cost now trumps just about everything. Forgive the phrasing. But if I could get cheaper cheese, milk, whatever it is, sour cream, from an American dairy, awesome. That is fantastic. That is what I want. I want comparable products at cheaper prices. And supply management denies that to us in exchange for keeping our dairy, you know, made in Canada. Cal in Oxbow texts in at 1-877-332-8255. Says supply management is the big reason why we don't have a deal with the largest market in the world. He says Carney has a bunch of conflicts of interest that are also interfering with negotiation. But yeah, it does come down to supply management. So why is it we can't get together and just get rid of this? Are those 10,000 dairy farmers that are benefiting from our supply management program really going to hold a solid trade deal hostage? If you think back to the negotiation of the new NAFTA, so-called new NAFTA back in 2017 and 18 during President Donald Trump's first term, if you'll remember, supply management came up then as well. It was a huge sticking point for the Americans. They really didn't like it. They wanted the opportunity for their farmers, their producers, to be able to sell their products across the border as they so desire, free of massive trade barriers, tariffs, whatever it is. And we just haven't got there. So it'll be fascinating to see in these new negotiations. By the way, that deadline is fast approaching. August the 1st is coming up on Friday. And that's supposedly our deadline before we'll face very, very steep tariffs from the U.S. It will be fascinating to see if the Carney government is ultimately willing to put supply management on the table or not. If you ask me to bet, I would bet towards the or not side. Yeesh. Open lines coming up next, 1-877-332-8255. Give me a call, send me a text with whatever's on your mind on this Monday morning. My name's Taylor McPherson, sitting in for Evan Bray. This is 650 CKOM and 980 CJME.